Our favorite twin mamas are back. Join Zoe Brown, mom to 5.5-month-old Luke and Jordan, and Tasha Perrod, parenting expert and twin mama herself, as we dive into the ups, downs, and delightful chaos of parenting two very different babies at once. So, what are you going to learn today? Why one twin loves solids and the other one isn't quite convinced? How to adapt flavors and textures for babies with different sensory personality. The magic formula behind Zoe's sleep through the night routine, which really is quite remarkable for this age. And why temperament and sensory profiles really matter in the weaning journey. So whether you are feeding twins, starting solids, or juggling naps, this episode is packed with real talk, practical tips, and heartwarming encouragement for parents navigating baby life. Tune in now. And please do share the episode if you find it useful. And of course, subscribe wherever you listen so that you never miss out on one of our episodes.
Welcome to Sense by Meg Forer, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Meg Forer, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we're going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Makia every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, mums and dads, to Sense by Meg Forer. We are so excited to have you join us here today because we have our regular guests, our twin mummies, both of them. Zoe Brown, welcome, Zoe.
Oh, it's so nice to be a regular.
You are a real regular. I mean, we have not missed a month, and I am just loving catching up with Jordan and Luke's progress. And we, of course, are joined by Tasha Perrod from Cape Town, who is also a mum to twins, but she's also a parenting expert, a well baby nurse, a lactation consultant, and so much more to so many mums in Cape Town. So thank you for joining us, Tasha.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me as always.
And it's been such an amazing journey because we actually spoke to Zoe 2 days before Luke and Jordan arrived. And I can remember these expectations of this preggy mum for this ideal birth and thinking, oh my goodness, a vaginal delivery of twins, I don't know if her expectations are going to be met. And of course, Zoe had the most amazing birth. And moms, if you have not listened to that episode, go back and listen. Because when Jordan and Luke were just a week old, we met up again with Zoe. And we went through what that journey had been like for her through the birth process. And then since then, we have met pretty much every month since then. And now we have 5.5-month-old Jordan and Luke. So it's really, really awesome to catch up, Zoe. So Zoe, tell us about your week, the highlights, the lowlights, and the big questions of the moment.
So I think the highlight definitely has to be we have started the solids journey. And throughout our discussions over the last couple of months, we have established that Luke is my sensitive sensory profile baby. And Jordan is more of the settled baby, very easygoing. What I have found to my surprising is Luke has taken to the solid journey like a champ. He is loving the butternut with nutmeg. He is loving the sweet potato with cinnamon. He is loving the cereal with the fruit mixed in. And Jordan has been a moaner from the beginning. So he is not feeding the solids. So I definitely have a foodie on my hands and I have a challenging one. So I think my question right now is with Jordan, do I just need to be more creative or do I need to be more patient? I'm trying different locations. I've tried in the high chair. I've tried on my lap. I've tried on my husband's lap. I've tried in the bouncer at an incline. I've tried with a bib. I've tried without a bib. I've tried with the little sleeve on just to see if it's maybe things irritating him or maybe he's just not ready.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because, you know, if you had only had Jordan, you know, you would just be following his kind of cues and his journey. And I think, you know, because he's not so excited about food, potentially if he was just a single boy, you would kind of hang back a bit and you would actually just leave it. You know, I mean, I find a lot of parents who are so excited to start food and sometimes their babies aren't ready to start food. And then you actually just leave it for a few days and you kind of just let it go. But I guess it's difficult because then if Luke's so into it, it's kind of difficult because you want to carry on the journey with Luke, but then with Jordan, you sort of feel like you have to hang back. So I guess you just, again, you know, we always speak about this and kind of treating them individually and just letting them individually lead you. I think, you know, obviously you're feeding them together and eating is so social. So I think in time, you know, Jordan will obviously, if you start eating together, you know, he'll see his brother eating more and then you're eating with him. But it might just be different. I mean, you might actually just have to take completely different approaches. I mean, with Luke, you know, you can obviously sit down and give him the purees and all the different things. Whereas Jordan might just every now and then just like have a little lick of his brother's food or a lick of your food or just kind of approach it like that. Because, I mean, yeah, babies' feeding journeys can be so, so different. And it's so typical for twins to do things so differently. You expect them to do the same things, but they just, it's so interesting how they always do things so, so, so differently.
Zoe, I mean, just a little bit about that. So Jordan is your more settled baby in the rest of his life. Is he the one who, I know that you've sent me so many videos of them. One of them is more engaging and smiley and interactive socially. Is that Jordan or Luke?
That's Luke.
Luke. So in actual fact, although at the beginning of this conversation, you said to me he's more sensitive, he's actually more of a social butterfly, which means that he wants to engage. He wants to make eye contact. He's the one who takes in all the information and wants more, more, more. And you sent me such delightful videos of them. And I could see the way that he engaged with the food with excitement and delight. And, you know, for those little babies, what actually happens with them is that milk is terribly boring because it's always the same flavor, temperature, texture, color. And so when they get the opportunity to expand their repertoire, they really do engage very, very readily. And to Tasha's point, that might feel like a norm for you, but actually that's not necessarily a norm for all babies. It is for social butterflies. They go with full gusto into food. They tend to move through their solid variety very rapidly. They tend to like things like you mentioned, the nutmeg and the flavors and, you know, and the oats porridge they, with purees. They tend to really love those, you know, that variety. And they actually tend to protest or get bored of eating if you just stick to bland rice cereal as we used to in the 90s. We don't do that anymore. But that's that profile. So Luke, for me, sounds like the social butterfly. It sounds like he's engaging well. They often also jump in with their hands. Have you found that with Luke? Does he like to kind of get his hand, not necessarily feed himself because they're a bit little for that, but does he get his hands involved in the food as well?
Not too much. So I'm trying a hybrid approach. So when we did the butternut, I gave them pieces of butternut. They didn't really grab it or interact with it. I had to like put it in their hand. Jordan just picked it up, squished it and chucked it on the floor. Luke held onto it for a bit. So he's definitely exploring a little bit more. I have to tell you, so now I'm thinking, okay, maybe it's like the spoon he doesn't like. This is Jordan now. So this morning I literally just put a little bit of his milk into a bowl and I gave him milk on the spoon and he was still like making all the moaning noises until he realized, hang on, it was milk. And then I just dipped the spoon into a little bit of cereal and I handed him the spoon and he took the spoon to his mouth. And I think when he realized there was cereal on it, he started moaning again. So I'm just trying to be creative.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing a good job of troubleshooting. So look, they are too little to really be self-feeding at 5.5 months, obviously. It's more that they will just hold the food. They might get it near their mouth, but just really the squishing and the exploration is what we're expecting at this stage. Sometimes they do start to get the food to their mouth just because, not because they're feeding themselves, just because they're interested in what's in their hand, like as if it was a rattle or anything. So it does sound to me like Luke's journey has been fairly typical for somebody who is more of an explorer, more social, more engaged. With Jordan, you know, I mean, you sent me a few of those videos and he is doing quite a bit of gagging, I can see. And so for him, he is like, this texture in my mouth is just, it's foreign, it's not milk. So on that, you know, a couple of things. I would, first of all, to Tasha's point, I would relax a little bit more with him in terms of trying to get the calories in. So if he has more of a milk diet for a little bit longer than Jordan, because what will happen with Luke is Luke will very quickly, as he approaches 6 months, he'll start to tip into solids, become something that he's going to get his calories from, less so milk. And Jordan might not do that. So I think I wouldn't worry. I would go slow with him. The second thing that I would do as an experiment is I would start to do his food a little smoother and a little less flavored. So if you're going to give butternut as an example with, let's say, nutmeg or cardamom or cinnamon in, which are some of the lovely recipes and spices that we like to put into our social butterflies butternut, I would actually leave it completely bland. And so really let go, try and focus in on a little bit of blander color, a little bit of blander texture, and a little bit of blander flavor for a little bit and see if he prefers that. And you might find, and I mean, I would be so interested to see this in a year's time, that he ends up being the baby that gravitates towards more of what we call a beige diet, where they go for the unchallenging foods. And it's not what we necessarily want, but it is often what they do. Our little ones who are less explorative, they often do end up there. You know, and it's very interesting because I actually recorded a podcast this week, which is coming out in a few months' time with a psychotherapist in America, actually. And we were talking about the way that little ones need to eat. And the reality is, for certain personalities, they need like 15 exposures to a food, and it's like just a dip of the tongue, and they will reject, 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 and then only months down the line actually decide they'll have it. And I think that's got to be your approach. It's got to be slow, it's got to be varied, but it's got to be within their comfort zone. And, you know, I think that just your weaning journey will be very different. And it's actually quite awesome because the moms who are listening have probably amongst them all got one of those. And, you know, so, you know, each will have a different type of baby. So does that all make sense?
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense. I that was kind of what my gut was telling me this morning. I just don't think he's not as adventurous as his brother. So I do need to just, I think, take a step back. But I think I was just so amazed that Luke polished his entire little bowl and he was like opening his mouth and smacking his lips like he wanted more. I'm like, sorry, boy, that was the serving suggestion.
And actually, when we talk about that that weaning journey, and you must go and do the Weaning Sense course in the app. Have you done the Weaning Sense course, Zoe?
Not yet, not in the app.
You must do it because Kath is, okay. She actually adds you to a WhatsApp group and you can ask all these questions on the WhatsApp group. So go into your app and do the weaning course. But what's quite interesting there is that we often do say that with these social butterflies and very gregarious eaters like Luke is, you have to be super careful that they don't completely kill their appetite for milk at this age, because they go, as to your point, they finish their bowl and sit there with their mouth open like more, more, more. So what we try and do under 6 months is prioritize milk still. And so you kind of do rather, you know, not completely fill them up on the food, because they would go there if they can.
Yeah, it looked like he was ready to do that.
Awesome. I know, I think that's a question. There's often a question that I get asked, can I overfeed my baby? I mean, I think because so many babies absolutely love food, like some of them, they just don't turn, they don't have an off button. So, I mean, obviously you can judge, you know, the kind of portion sizes, but I always say like, just try and increase it a little bit each day, you know, so say like he finishes 3 tablespoons one day. And if he like smashes it the next day, definitely increase a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. But yeah, definitely before 6 months, it's all about the milk. I mean, there's plenty of babies who only start solids at 6 months. So, you know, you're ready, you've started a little bit earlier than some other babies. And I mean, yeah, I mean, there's some babies at 4 months who are desperate for food, desperate, desperate. And some, you know, a whole two months later, you're only ready for food. Have you actually even tried like giving them something hard to chew on? So like, you know, I mean, obviously the closer to 6 months he gets, he'll be able to hold, you know, like a piece of celery or a hard carrot, or I don't know how much biltong you can access in Australia, but in South Africa, obviously there's kind of the teething biltong, and that's such a great way to also kind of get him excited about food and holding himself and being in control, so that he can actually play around with the food rather than kind of being, yeah, if it is a texture thing, it might actually prefer something really hard to kind of chew on, which is obviously always really nice for the teething as well.
Okay. I haven't, so I will definitely give that a try.
Yeah, that is actually a great piece of advice. And I'll tell you what to do there. So if you take, at the moment, obviously your hard foods have choking risks. So you would want to make sure it's something that isn't going to break off, which is why celery is actually a really nice one, because celery doesn't break off. And a hard carrot can work as well. So I would take one of those, and then I would put a little bowl of his own. I always love the two-bowl approach, where they have their own bowl that they control.
and put in that a super bland puree. So it could even just be sweet potato, like literally mooled into a smooth, silky, with a little bit of milk in its texture, and let him dip it in there and lick the sweet potato off the celery, as an example. And in that way, he's actually is feeding himself, but he's using something that he's now tolerating and getting to his mouth. So I love Tasha's idea of just trying that, even just as an experiment.
I think so many parents are so scared of, not scared, but just so worried about the mess. I mean, I know when I started feeding my babies, I was always like wiping everything off their mouth and making sure like one wipe, one spoon, one wipe. But I think also it's just a matter of like letting go. And it's obviously so much easier in the summertime when you can actually just put them in nappies and they can just smush the food all over themselves. And then that becomes fun, you know. It's quite intimidating as a little baby, especially if they're sitting in a high chair and there are these two parents staring at them with a spoon coming towards them. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be being watched by two people the whole time when I have a meal. So it also can be quite intimidating, obviously, with everybody watching you. And so just often playing around with the food and, yeah, just kind of making it messy kind of play might also pique his interest into actually kind of enjoying it a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, but well done for getting into the feeding journey. I think sometimes it's a little daunting. And then once you start, it's kind of, you got it under your belt. So well done.
And Zoe, are they with all the poos? Are they with all the poos? With all the solids, are they poos are fine? Have you found that they changed? We love talking about poos. Have they been constipated at all? Or
Nothing unusual. I did find, well, both of them actually. There will be one nappy where it is a runny poo, and then there's one nappy that's a little bit more moussey. It's nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing has increased or decreased. So far we're doing well. Something I did do before I wanted to start the solids journey, when they were about 6-7 weeks old, when we transitioned them onto formula, we also had to do the transition to sensitive formula because they were just struggling to digest and it was just difficult for them. So the doctor recommended moving over to the sensitive formula. And we've been on the sensitive formula for a large amount of time. And I feel like they have outgrown the struggles to burp and all of that I've actually transitioned them back to the original formula. It is half the price of what the sensitive formula was.
I was going to say.
And I just did it extremely slow. I think it took me about two and a half weeks of just a couple of days where I just increased the spoons because it was the same measuring quantity. And luckily there was no upset tummies. So yeah, so far everything has been good. I just don't know what to expect when I'm assuming when the food increases, it will probably become more human-like, the stools than baby-like.
Yeah, it does happen like this.
Just in terms of introducing more food, I find that when babies have, a lot of babies absolutely love banana. So sometimes, you know, parents give bananas like every single day. And I do find having a lot of bananas can sometimes constipate them. So just, I mean, not hold back on the bananas, but when you do start to introduce more bananas, and sometimes too many apples as well, also a bit constipating. And then the cereal. So, you know, some of the cereals can constipate. I mean, yeah, as Meg said, in the 90s, when everyone was introducing rice cereal as their first introduction to solids, I mean, these little babies' tummies were just so uncomfortable, rock hard. And everyone was, I'm glad we've moved on from that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I always recommend the pea diet. So prunes, pears, peaches, pawpaws, apricots, all that's really good for constipation.
Oh, that's a lovely advice, Tasha. Thank you for that. Zoe, how many meals are they on at the moment? Have you just got the one a day, or are you on two already?
I'm trying to be consistent with one a day. I think Luke is definitely ready to potentially have a second. So at the moment, we're only one a day. A friend asked me the other day if I've tried giving them some water. So I actually... We have these little sippy cups. I didn't expect anything from it because it was a little straw. And I offered it to Luke and he managed to gulp a little. I don't know how much water he got, but I mean, I could see from him, he was definitely sucking, and it was more than drool coming out. So it was definitely water that he managed to sip up through the straw. So I've been just offering the water, but I mean, Jordan hasn't taken to it, whereas Luke has had a couple of sips.
Yeah, so in look, it's winter so at the moment, so they're probably unlikely to be terribly thirsty and their diet is predominantly milk still. But as soon as babies do start solids, we do recommend just starting to offer it a little bit, usually after a meal, you know, a little bit of a meal, a little bit of water. It's not a massive priority because milk is still the primary source of nutrition, and so it's liquid. But yeah, that's great. I mean, exposing them to water is absolutely fabulous. I think also they're probably having a mid-morning, I'm guessing, single feed. So I think probably you can, you know, within the next few weeks, start to introduce that evening meal as well. And then usually what we do is we'll then move the morning feed to breakfast and then lunch and then supper. And then by the time they're kind of 6.5 months, it's quite, most little ones have started to progress onto 3 meals a day. No snacks, but later that will come later.
Okay. I'll definitely give it a try. I think with Jordan, I was also part of my experimenting. I was also just so mindful every time when I did offer food, he was moaning, and it's just trying to get the timing right. I'm trying to have him not be hungry, so about an hour after his bottle, but not when he's tired. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, where is that sweet spot? But I think I need to go back and just offer him the more bland, plain food, smooth, like you've suggested.
But you know, Zoe, just listening to you talk, your instinct is so on the mark. You are really an amazing mom, because I think a lot of those little experimentations are really thinking about it from the baby's perspective, which is what we call reflective parenting, which is when a mom doesn't look at the behavior as a behavior, but rather looks at what is underlying the behavior and, you know, thinking through the situation from their baby's point of view. And it's really awesome. You're an incredible mommy in that respect. So,
thank you for saying that.
Yeah, no, really, really. And tell us about other parts of their lives at the moment. Developmentally, have there been any kind of new things that you've noticed in the last few weeks?
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep? ParentSense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips, and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download ParentSense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
And tell us about other parts of their lives at the moment. Developmentally, have there been any kind of new things that you've noticed in the last few weeks?
Both have definitely become vocal in their own way. And also the kicking, I think they are becoming aware of their legs and their feet. It's just kicking constantly in the bathtub. Jordan is just a wrecking ball. He is just splash, 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 arms and legs. Poor Luke is like, what's going on next to me? I think the arms are just flapping everywhere. So he's constantly like, banging like the little arms. And we've been doing swimming lessons. So last night they got a little sticker for being calm in the water. Like they've taken to the water. So they're very relaxed in the water.
Oh, that's amazing. So the activities they're doing in the week, outside of obviously all the beautiful stimulation activities you're doing at home, which by the way, your Instagram moms, if you want ideas for little 5.5-month-olds to do, you must go and see Zoe's Instagram. I mean, Zoe, I saw some delightful ones of them lying in front of the mirror in your kind of the room you use as your gym, I think, and using like just amazing tummy time. So you are doing some fabulous activities at home, but what are they doing outside of home? It sounds like swimming.
They're doing swimming, and then we go for walks whenever the weather allows for it. So we definitely do a lot of walks, and we've been doing baby sensory classes. So today, each week is a different theme. So last week, the theme was fly under the African sun. So it felt like I was going back to the motherland. And today the theme was book week. So everyone had to like try and dress up. So I just dressed the boys in their little checkered shirts and little neck scarf as little cowboys. But they were just encouraging to, you know, look at books and exploring the literature. But it's really fun, these classes. There's lots of music, you know, lots of little elements to stimulate them, whether it's bubbles or lights or tambourines or little bells. It's definitely a sensory overload. But even though week four that we've been going, week four or five, I'm finding that we got given the same bells we were given on week one, and they were less overwhelmed by the sounds of the bells. So it's definitely, they're getting into it, yeah.
Yeah. And last time we were chatting, we were kind of chatting about sort of finding a tribe or finding people to connect with, and kind of you were feeling a bit lonely. Are you finding now that you've kind of connected more with some of the other moms in the other group? I mean, are they the same moms and babies that come through every week?
Mostly the same parents. And a few weeks ago, I got to the class a little bit early and there was another mom and we got talking. And you know, when you just click with someone, so I did it. We did exchange numbers and she ended up getting her baby to also join swimming class. And they signed up for the same swimming class as us. And she's got such a wonderful group of mommy friends. So she's been inviting me along for coffees. And I think we're setting up another date this week. And we've got all this space here. So I might actually, once I get to know some of the ladies, I'll actually just suggest, you know, instead of us meeting at a coffee shop, why don't everyone just come to my house? We can put the blankets on the floor and the babies can actually be outside of the strollers. But it's definite, it makes a big difference once you connect with some of the moms.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just makes everything feel less lonely, I think. Does your husband ever do any of the activities with you? Does he have the swimming lessons with you or...?
Yes. So we do the swimming lessons together because it's a parent-child program. So I had to sign us up for evening swimming classes. And in 2 weeks' time, we're going to go away for his birthday. So he's taken the Friday off. So he'll come with to the sensory class to experience that with us. And then we're going to go away for the weekend. So I think he's looking forward to experiencing that side too.
Absolutely fabulous. And then Zoe, how's the sleep going?
Our sleep is going a lot better since I've dropped the evening nap. So the boys are only on 3 naps a day. The morning nap is generally a short one. What I have found is they would give me a 12-hour stretch. So we'll do bedtime at 7 and then generally they'll want their first bottle 6:37. On the days where I feed them at 7 o'clock, they'll be awake for an hour, hour and a half, and then I can see they're ready to go down for a short nap. But in the beginning, it used to be they would have that bottle and they would want to sleep further for another hour, hour and a bit. And that used to be my gym time. So now I need to rework my schedule. But the fact that they're waking up 6:37 means I just need to wake up a bit earlier and get my workout in before that first bottle. And then we don't nap after 5 o'clock anymore. So it's very heartbreaking when you put them down for a nap at 4 o'clock, 4:15, and then at 5 o'clock, I have to go and wake them up. But I've got to wake them up. We do it gently, but I'll open the blinds and like turn off the white noise machine. But I have, since I've stopped letting them nap beyond 5 o'clock and we do bedtime at 7, they sleep through the night until the next morning, 6:37.
Oh. Wow. They sleep through the night, Zoe. That is unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have a lot of moms listening to this and going, oh my gosh, how has she got it so right? Because the reality is what you've actually got there is textbook. And moms, for those of you who are listening who do not have this, do not worry. This is not the way it works for all babies. But if you can, this is what usually would be a great thing if this wasn't working out for you, Zoe, what I would be recommending. So, you know, kind of your baby waking up between 6 and 7, spot on. Usually an hour and a half is all they'll manage in the morning of awake time, because that morning awake time is always shorter than the afternoon awake time. So usually an hour and a half. That morning sleep is usually the shorter one. The second sleep is usually the longest of the day. And in the third sleep, if they go past 2 hours before bedtime, because their awake time now is 1.5 to 2 hours, you would wake them so that you can have a 2 hour stretch in which you can do dinner, bath, bottle, and then down by 7 o'clock. And moms, that is in fact what Zoe is doing by the sounds of things. And it is, if you can guide your babies now at this age towards it, it is a great routine. And just to say that, you know, routines don't work for everyone or for all babies. But, you know, I think it does improve baby sleep when you are able to get them into some sort of routine like that, because the babies who are having very vague sleeps, too many sleeps or too little sleeps in the day tend to be the ones that wake up at night. So I think the fact you're getting a good night's sleep is largely driven by those good day sleeps as well. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so unbelievably wonderful. So, I mean, also just to kind of think about what lies ahead, I mean, they're nearly 6 months and really they should still be staying on three sleeps until they're about 8 or 9 months. And then they start transitioning down to two naps. So enjoy the beautiful period, because obviously just as you kind of get all settled in, it changes, but you've got a good few months ahead of you where it's still potentially going to be the same routine. And then yeah, 8 or 9 months, you can see that they start pushing their awake times, and then most babies have a nap in the morning time and a nap in the afternoon time, and then yeah, bedtime. So yeah, so fantastic.
And it's actually quite interesting because I call these cusp ages, Zoe, where babies sleeps transition. And the one that Tasha's just spoken about is the 8 to 9 month old cusp age. And what happens there is that they can't fit three sleeps into the day anymore without pushing their bedtime out. And so there's a real juggle at that time of actually, because they start to drop that afternoon sleep, but they can't quite make it through to bedtime. And so you have to be more flexible with that bedtime. So it is a challenging time. It happens again at 12 months and then again in the toddler years. But the one that you're going through right now is the other one. It's the first one. And that is the one where they've kind of go from doing more sleeps in the day, usually four. They need to drop down to three. Otherwise, it's interfering with their bedtime. And often, and you actually said this as we got on this evening, because they're on, they're with you and on camera, as it were. And that's because they've woken up a little early, which means that they're going to have more than 2 hours until their bedtime. And it's always a juggle. You know, moms will often say to me, well, shall I try and stick in another 15 minute cat nap, or do I just let them get overtired before bedtime? And I think, you know, what I often say to moms is if it's kind of 3 hours that they've woken up 3 hours before bedtime, I probably would try and put in like just a 15 minute walk around the block, because they just won't make 3 hours. If it's kind of 2.5 hours, then I'd rather just bring bedtime forward a bit. And then you just make bedtime, instead of being 7, it'll be 6:30, because they won't make it all the way. They just get too tired. So, but it's a classic age where moms are trying to juggle, how do I fit in a third nap, your fourth nap in this case, and without disrupting bedtime. So it's very, very common.
Yeah. I also find it's happened a couple of times where, you know, technically the nap in an ideal world should end at about 5 o'clock, where they'll wake up past four, half past four. And I do find that going into the evening, just less stimulation. So we've got low lights on. I keep the music to a minimal. Sometimes I actually just switch the music off. And I find that that allows us to stretch without getting them overstimulated for the evening.
Yeah, I love that, Zoe. That is such a good idea. The other thing that you can do, and this is often, you know, if they've got just too long a stretch in the evening, is, again, like you said, take down all stimulation. And then between dinner and bath, just take a walk around the garden if the weather's nice, because nature is such a great regulator. And so it'll be something that distracts them without overstimulating them. So, you know, just a little quick walk in the garden, or if it's like in Cape Town where going into December, the sun is up late, I would actually even put them under a little mat, and same in Australia, a little mat under the trees just for 15 minutes, because it stretches the happy awake time without overstimulating them. So yeah, it's all about finding ways to distract them without overstimulating them, as you say.
Yes. Oh, that's a good idea. Well, definitely. Well, I'm, you know, you can feel the seasons are changing. I'm starting to notice some of the trees are slowly getting little buds on them. So it's definitely, we're getting out of winter, which I think this has probably been my hardest winter. Firstly, it was my first winter as a mom. We moved. So it's also, you know, first time living in an area where I don't have a community. So this winter felt exceptionally hard.
Yeah. And I saw your beautiful post yesterday on Instagram of the cherry blossoms coming out, or peach blossoms. And it is, you know, I think it's, and you're going into also one of the most exciting times in their lives, because I always say that 6 to 9 month old stage is the best, because they're sitting, they can use their hands, but they're not moving yet. And when they start moving, all hell breaks loose. So you've got a beautiful 3 months coming up.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. We've, at the baby sensory class, I obviously like try prop them up for some of the activities. So they're very cute when they sit assisted, but Luke tends to like just lean to the side and fall over. So he's definitely more hunched over than his brother.
What's quite a nice thing to do, Zoe, is to get them sitting together. It's actually just get a big either like a laundry basket or like a big cardboard box, and you can actually just prop them in together, and it's quite cute because then you can kind of prop them with a little cushion. So they're learning to sit, but they obviously can't topple over. So getting them together in a little basket or a cardboard box is quite cute for them to go do, and then facing each other, and they can start kind of playing with each other and put some toys in the middle. And so yeah, you can certainly try that as they are learning how to sit.
Yeah, that is a lovely activity. Are you doing the activities in the ParentSense app, Zoe? You must have a look at those because there's one for every day, and the propping them in the box is definitely one of them for around about this age. And it's a great idea, Tasha. Thank you for that.
Oh, amazing. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, I cannot believe our time is up again. And the next time we chat, they're probably likely to be over 6 months. It's hard to believe. But Zoe, it sounds like they're doing so well. And yeah, hang in there. And spring is on its way.
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you. And thank you to both of you. Always encouraging, always giving the right guidance. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Zoe, I mean, you really are a super mom. You are unbelievable. You are making this journey look so easy. You are doing it, yeah, unbelievably. So yeah, well done to you. You're a fantastic, fantastic mom.
Yeah, wonderful. And to all the moms out there, you're all amazing mommies, just like Zoe has, I'm sure, days where she does feels like she's not winning. We all have days when we feel like we're not winning. But you are an amazing mommy, just applying your mind to the things around your babies. So encouragement to everybody out there. And thank you for listening and for joining us. Please do share the podcast with your friends. And we will chat again soon, Tasha. Thank you, Tasha. And thank you, Zoe.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Lovely to chat.
Cheers.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.